Welcome to the Movie Film Show, featuring the insightful reviews of Mr. Film and Mr. Movie. This week we review Kung Fu Panda 2 and Midnight in Paris. And now here are Mr. Movie and Mr. Film.
Hello, I'm Mr. Movie.
And I'm Mr. Film. First up, Poe and the Furious Five are back in the 3D animated Kung Fu Panda 2.
Our greatest masters are disappearing. I fear this is the work of Lord Shen, who has unleashed a new kind of threat on our world. This could mean the end of Kung Fu.
But I just got Kung Fu.
And now you must save it.
How can Kung Fu stop something that stops Kung Fu?
Here we go!
Poe, voiced once again by Jack Black, is happily basking in the love and affection of the various furry villagers of the Misty Valley he and his pals have sworn to defend. While far away in the capital of China, things aren't going quite as well. Master Shen, voiced by Gary Oldman, a maniacal, insane peacock who was banished many years before by his ruler peacock parents, returns with gunpowder weapons and a bunch of wolves to destroy Kung Fu and take over the throne. Of course, Poe and the Five have to go on a journey to save the country and, of course, Kung Fu. The PG-rated Kung Fu Panda 2 is as cute and fuzzy and exciting as the trailers make it out to be. Poe and the rest of the crew, Tigress, Mantis, Monkey, Crane, and Viper, work well together as they work to defeat the evil Lord Shen. Along the way, Poe finds out the truth about his adoptive bird father, his past, and the need for inner peace while getting into all sorts of martial arts-inspired scrapes. As kids fare, Kung Fu Panda 2 works well. Poe is a kid-friendly character, big, awkward, and lovable, sort of a martial arts teddy bear. The slapstick action is fun, and there are several inventive moments. And one I particularly like was involved a Chinese dragon puppet, which is really very clever and kind of grotesque at the same time. The dialogue is also quite good with running gags about Poe's fuzzy cuddliness. And I particularly like Master Shifu, Poe's teacher, who was voiced expertly by Dustin Hoffman, who is one part Yoda and one part fortune cookie. The film is a little long, even at 90 minutes, with at least one false ending, a kind of a dicey prospect for a kid's film, and sets up a sequel whose premise I don't think I really buy, but we'll see at the next go-around. Now, Mr. Movie, I expect you'll have some interesting comments about the 3D, so I don't want to steal your thunder, but I will say that I thought it sort of worked here, much better than, say, in Thor or Pirates of the Caribbean, which we reviewed last show. My only big criticism of the film is, and this is a stretch, I realize, since we are dealing with a kid's flick, is that there are some big concepts, inner peace, for instance, that are introduced and not really adequately explained or explored. Now, I don't think we should have had some sort of philosophy lecture in the middle of the film, but this is a key part of the resolution, so I wish director Jennifer Yu or writers Jonathan Abel or Glenn Berger had spent a little bit of time discussing why this is an important part of the martial journey. Now, on the flip side, Yu does not shy away from some of the dark stuff. Characters are killed off, mostly off screen, and the stakes are high. So on balance, I appreciate that Yu doesn't pull any punches here. I saw this at a preview with a bunch of kids, and they seemed to accept and get what was going on. I didn't get a sense that any emotional scarring was going on during the runtime. So I think a safe bet for parents to take the little kids to. Overall, DreamWorks Kung Fu Panda 2 is a fun martial arts romp that will keep the kiddies engaged and won't insult the taller members of the audience as well. I say check it out with or without the kids. You'll have a ball. I'm giving this a B+.
Yeah. I think that's pretty spot on, Mr. Film. And you're absolutely right about the whole inner peace thing. And they should have just jettisoned that. And it wasn't because it wasn't comprehensible for the children. I think it wasn't comprehensible for the adults either.
Yeah.
I mean, what does inner peace really mean? According to the picture, I'm not really sure, but I think it has something to do with accepting your past, but not letting it define your future. And I think that's a pretty good theme, but they could have gone one small step further and just say that, you know, one is the master of one's own destiny or something like that. you know, that your future is determined by your own choices, not what someone else did in the past, and not what someone else thinks of you, etc. So I think they could have narrowed the theme down a little bit, and that would have made the picture on the whole a bit better and more comprehensible for the children and the adults as well. So
yeah, I agree with you.
I think B plus is kind of where I'm at too. The humor in here is pretty good, and you mentioned the one of those scenes where there's kind of a poo joke in there, but it's a poo joke that's not actually gross and is actually kind of funny. So, you know, I stand corrected when I say that all poo jokes are bad. I mean, here's an example where, you know, it kind of worked. So
yeah, it kind of worked. And it was done in a very fun way that actually pushed the plot along. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I thought it was good. And I thought the action was very inventive overall. The voice work overall was great. Gary Oldman, again, he's another one of those actors who could just read a phone book.
Oh, yeah. And now this is going to sound a little strange, Mr. Film, since we're talking about an animated movie, but I have to say that I really like the choreography of the kung fu here. I mean, the fight scenes were extremely imaginative, and I think they really took advantage of both the animation form as well as the 3D format that actually dramatized and enhanced the kung fu action and moved the story along all at the same time. And yeah. I have to think that Jackie Chan, who voices a character in the movie, maybe also had some kind of hand in the kung fu sequences and shaping them a little bit, because they are that good and that cool.
Yeah, they are. And they also make fun of some of the cliches of the genre a little bit, too. Some of the slow motion gags that are in a couple of them are in the trailer. And they do that a couple of times, which is pretty amusing. So, this was a cute film. I liked it. I actually liked it a little bit better. We saw Rio a few weeks ago. I liked it a lot better than that. And
I did, too. I mean, I liked Rio as well, but I think this is better than that.
Yeah.
So, you know, the only distraction here, I think, is Seth Rogen as the praying mantis. I don't know. I think that Seth Rogen, for me, is kind of like your Zach Galifianakis. It's just like I can't stand him on screen no matter what. And even when I just hear his voice, it's just a little bit grating. So,
yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, so I agree.
There's a funny joke with that character, though. So
it is, but I don't know.
That's not him. It's the writers and
right,
such.
Right. So I agree. B plus is where it's at. But let's talk about the 3D a little bit, because you propped that up and you're kind of forcing me to do it. So, you know, we've seen a number of 3D pictures now, and you know, isn't it interesting that the movies where 3D seems to work best is in the animated category?
Yeah.
And the best 3D movies that I've seen since the 3D craze, you know, has started really is How to Train Your Dragon. And those scenes where the main character is learning to fly his first dragon, you know, as he swoops through the cliffs and over the ocean, we fly along with him and we get to experience it in 3D. And I think it really enhances the wonder and the magnitude of his discovery in the movie. And so in that sense, I think artistically it works very well. And I think, you know, the problem with some of these live action pictures, and I know that you've talked about this with me a little bit offline, Mr. Film, you know, is that they're shot in 3D, but with kind of a 2D approach.
Yeah.
And I think we're still discovering what works for 3D and what wasn't, and how to exploit the platform, especially for the live action pictures. And, you know, this is going to sound a little ironic, but I think that with 3D, you kind of have to take more of a theatrical approach when you're shooting in 3D. Because if you have a lot of cuts and close-ups, in a regular movie, you basically are telling the audience exactly what to focus on all the time. And, well, there's no point in having multiple focus points, which is what 3D gives you, if you're going to yell in our eyeballs what to look at, right? So you have to take a step back and show the full screen and give us a reason to choose to focus on multiple things on the screen, while at the same time, get your message across to the audience no matter what or who you're focusing on. So, you know, I think that's hard to do. And as we see with, like, even Kung Fu Panda 2, there's a lot of characters in here in this, and yet we can focus on any one of them at any time, and the story and the message still gets through and kind of works. So I think that's really one of the key elements to making 3D work, and it'll be interesting to see how Kung Fu Panda does at the box office in 3D. We can maybe talk about that a little bit after the results come in after this weekend. So
yeah, and I think you bring out a good point. I think the other thing, the problem too with the whole 3D craze, and I think it is sort of a craze at this point, you know, we may see a breakthrough at some point. It really comes down to, do you have a good story to tell? And one of the films that did quite well actually in Cannes this last couple weeks, over the last couple weeks, which I'm quite interested in is a film called The Artist, which is a silent black and – I believe it's black and white – a silent black and white film. And so – and people have gone crazy for this thing according to the press reports I've read. So and it's all about the story. It has a really – apparently a very interesting and innovative sort of story. And so I think that's really what it is. If – you have a story that you also can marry the technical aspects to. I think then we'll really see, you know, a real what 3D does. I'm not a big fan of Avatar, but it did, I mean, as an entertainment, it worked. As a 3D entertainment, it worked. As a film, you know, not so much. But but at least that almost got there. And I think this sort of works too. And like you said, in the theatrical sort of thing. And I think that's one of the things they did. They kind of built this really cool. These really great cities and all these great set pieces and things, and it's a lot of fun. It's really a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So visually, it's a great looking picture too.
And I agree, you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, it really is story that drives a movie, and I think it's commercial appeal. You know, and a lot of marketing can get people into seats, but the movies that make mega box office are there because they've, you know, not only had good marketing, but because they've had a story that's hooked people in. And it has all the elements, and all the elements serve the story. So when we're talking about 3D, it needs to serve the story. When we talk about gross out humor and whatnot, a lot of times, you know, I hate that most of the time because it takes away from that. So this is all a lesson that all these elements need to serve that fundamental driving purpose. So,
absolutely.
You know, we'll see how 3D pans out over time here.
It'll be an interesting thing to kind of track this as we get more of these films coming out.
But I'm not ready to call it dead, so.
Yeah, I'm not either. I think we could have a breakthrough, but I mean, it's exactly what happened in the 50s and 60s that it came out. It was a gimmick. Nobody knew what to do with it. I mean, for God's sake, Alfred Hitchcock made a 3D film, and it didn't work. So someone who's a master of the art form couldn't figure out how to use it. Some of the lesser lights we have today, I don't think are going to figure out how to use it either. So
yeah. All right. Well, moving right along, Mr. Film, our next movie review is Midnight in Paris, the latest from writer-director Woody Allen, starring Owen Wilson, Rachel McAdams, Marion Cotillard, Michael Sheen, and Kathy Bates, and it is set in Paris.
I mean, this is unbelievable. There's no city like this in the world.
You're in love with a fantasy.
I'm in love with you.
Did you get in last night?
Not that late. Yeah, I'll probably end up going on another little hike tonight.
Where'd Gil run off to?
I've been walking around Paris.
Where do you think Gil goes every night?
He walks and gets ideas.
Mm-hmm. I had a private detective follow him.
And what happened?
I don't know. The detective agency says the detective is missing.
I'm in a very perplexing situation.
Okay, the PG-13 rated picture from Sony Classics is about Gil, played by Owen Wilson, a successful but unfulfilled American screenwriter who's trying to do what he thinks is to write for real. In other words, he wants to be a novelist. The picture opens while he and his fiancée, played by Rachel McAdams, are on vacation in France, Paris specifically. But it's not quite clear that McAdams is best suited for Wilson's character as events unfold and Gil's struggle within himself. He's struggling with questions like, am I any good? Aren't I just a screenwriting hack? Can I actually write a novel? Is my novel even comprehensible? You know, these questions create a bunch of inner turmoil for him, while his fiancée doesn't seem too interested and is more fancied by their pseudo-intellectual and pedantic friends. So Wilson's Gil retreats from it all in what turns out to be a somewhat mysterious and perhaps even mystical midnight walks in Paris. And I don't want to give anything away because part of the charm of this picture is where Gil actually goes, and not knowing that going in makes this all the more fun and exciting. And I'm really glad they didn't give this away in the marketing and the trailer, which would have been very easy to do. Much of the picture takes place here. About 60 to 70% of the 1 hour, 40 minute runtime is where Gil actually goes. And that they managed to create a trailer without giving away something that happens in the first act and sets up the rest of the story is really, really quite an accomplishment and pretty great. Needless to say, I think this is Woody Allen at his best. We get smart dialogue, interesting characters, funny, often hilarious lines. And a few times I laughed so hard I almost cried. At its core, there's a fish-out-of-water premise here that makes the comedy so funny. I really love fish-out-of-water humor, but that doesn't always work. You have to really balance believability on the one hand with absurdity on the other. And the more you can kind of stretch that out, that distance between believability and absurdity, without going too far and sort of breaking that illusion, I think the funnier it is. And Woody Allen has found that perfect balance here, striking all the right chords. And the performances all around are pretty good. I like that Allen shies away from too many close-ups and opts instead for longer takes, which lets us see what good acting is all about and ironically pulls the audience closer into the picture. Marion Cotillard as Adriana, a sort of love interest and muse to Gil, is enchanting. And Michael Sheen, who plays a friend to the couple, is fantastic and pretty funny. He manages to steal every scene he's in without upstaging the rest of the cast or taking away from the story. Rachel McAdams as the fiance, well, she's not bad. She's also not in this very much as you might think, and her character isn't quite likable. I mean, she works in this, but somehow felt a little bit flat to me. Now, finally, Mr. Film, let's talk about Owen Wilson. I know that you don't like his shtick, but just as we talked about in our last show with Will Ferrell in Everything Must Go, I think the shtick is turned on its head and set in a context that really makes it work, again, without upstaging or being very showy about it. So I found Wilson's performance satisfying and playing well into all of that fish-out-of-water stuff. So on the whole, I really enjoyed this movie. It has a reverence for nostalgia and includes some great tunes written by Cole Porter as well, one of my favorites. And while embracing nostalgia and sort of fantasizing about the past, you know, these people who always say that everything was better way back when, it also gives us a nice, fresh splash of reality to really keep our heads looking in the right direction. And I'm ready to go see this again. So, Mr. Film, last week you gave Everything Must Go your first A of the summer, so I'm going to follow suit and give Woody Allen's Midnight in Paris my first A of the summer.
All right. Mr. Movie, I'm with you. I really like this film. I was completely charmed by the gimmick, and like you, I won't give it away. I wish I could, because I think we could have a talk about – there's some really interesting things we could talk about because of it. But I'm like you. I'm glad they didn't give it away in the trailer. But suffice it to say, if you don't love literature or art – of course, if you're watching a film about Paris, what are the two primary things you're going to be talking about? I say stay away from this picture, or you're going to be kind of bored. But you're right about Wilson. This is the best performance he's given outside of a Wes Anderson picture. He's likable, energetic, fun, and yeah, he's doing his own Wilson shtick, but there's an earnestness to it that we haven't seen in a long time from him. The film broadly is about writing and literature and the creative process, and I think Allen says some interesting things about all of this, all about creativity. And as a man also approaching his 80th year, I think he has a great, particularly interesting take on nostalgia, which is another big theme in the picture.
Yeah.
I also want to mention Marion Cotillard. She's just radiant here. Several of the characters that Wilson meets throughout his journey become smitten with her, and it's easy to see why. She's beautiful, mysterious, and most important, eminently likable and vulnerable. While I really like this film, and like you, I am ready to line up and see it again, there were a couple of minor points that bothered me. I found the non-midnight parts to be a little less effective than the midnight ones. Though you're right, Michael Sheen is incredible here, and I wish that there was a little more blending of these two parts of the picture. I also don't know if I quite buy the very, very end of the picture, the final resolution. But these are only slight quibbles. This is one of those pictures that will have you and your friends talking for a while. And I'd say go see it with a couple of your good friends that love talking film and talking big ideas. There are some big ideas that Allen peppers throughout. And I'll argue there are even a couple of very interesting existential ones that will take a couple pictures of beer to sort out. So even though I had a couple of minor problems with this picture, I'm with you on this one, Mr. Movie. I think this is my second A of the summer.
All right. Excellent.
Yeah.
Our first, I think that's our first double A of the year.
I think so. And it's well deserved. It really is. If you remember, I liked Alan's last picture that came out I think late last year.
Yeah.
And this kind of is almost that was also about a writer as well who's had writer's block. And it's almost like those two films would be a good pair to watch together, because
I didn't like that one so much.
I think there is also an interesting take on the creative process and such, and it's more of a darker take. This is a very radiant sort of take on it, whereas the other picture was a little the dark flip side of it. So I think they're interesting pair of films. So but I thought it was well made, well acted. Not a false note here. So this is a real win. So there's a couple of good pictures out there right now. I mean, they're small, but they're good pictures out there.
Well, Kung Fu Panda is going to be big too.
Yeah, and it's a good picture.
Yeah,
it's a good picture. But you also have Pirates of the Caribbean out there as well. So and Thor. And I don't care what anybody says. It was a bad picture.
Oh, that was horrible. So. Yeah, everybody else is crazy.
They really are.
All right. Now that we just alienated everybody else.
Yeah, there we go.
Let's wrap up the show.
Okay.
All right, that's all we have for this week. Mr. Film, what are we seeing next show?
Next week, we'll be seeing Hangover 2, yet another sequel. Woo-hoo! And Tree of Life, which just won the Palme d'Or at Cannes. So we'll see what we think about that.
And it sounds like it's kind of controversial. Some people are loving it, some people are hating it. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm interested to see what I think of it, so.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. And there's a dinosaur in it. That's all I know. So, and I'm not kidding. There's supposedly a dinosaur in it. So stay tuned, everyone.
I did not know that.
Yes.
All right. Well, as always, visit our website at www.moviefilmshow.com. If you have a comment or question, feel free to send us an email. Just write to mail@moviefilmshow.com. You can like us on facebook.com/moviefilmshow. Follow us on Twitter. .com/moviefilmshow. We're a movie film show everywhere, Mr. Film.
All right, we're taking over the world.
And finally, we have a comment line, so you can call the Movie Film Show and leave a comment 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 818-581-2010.
All right.
Mr. Film, I'll see you next show.
See you next show, Mr. Movie.
You have to really balance believability on the one hand with absurdity on the other. Am I any good? Aren't I just a screenwriting hack? Can I actually write a novel? Is my novel even comprehensible?
These are only slight quibbles, but there's an earnestness to it that we haven't seen in a long time. I think we could have a breakthrough.
It also gives us a nice, fresh splash of reality to really keep our heads looking in the right direction.
Inner peace, for instance.
I stand corrected when I say that all poo jokes are bad. They are that good and that cool.
Yeah, they are. You'll have a ball.